This is Farron Cousins, and you're listening to the best of Ring of Fire. We will be back next week in the new year with a brand new show for you. Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. We have a phenomenal show coming up for you today. Two Ring of Fire favorites. First, we have Cliff Schechter. He's going to be joining me to talk about Ron DeSantis's assault on Florida residents down here. And of course, how DeSantis is trying to become the next Donald Trump. And Heather Digby Parton returns to the Ring of Fire to talk about Donald Trump's dwindling influence and how his endorsements of certain candidates could in fact doom the Republicans in this year's midterms. If you want the full Ring of Fire podcast every single week, we encourage all of you to subscribe. Go to rofpodcast.com and sign up. Not only do you get the full show each week, but you also get access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire archives. And for Ring of Fire every single day, go to youtube.com/theringoffire and subscribe to our channel. Everybody's wondering right now who is going to be the next Donald Trump if Donald Trump does not stay to be the current Donald Trump. It's a weird situation, but I think a lot of us looking at the situation understand that the next Donald Trump is already here and he's already out-trumping Trump. And that is, of course, Ron DeSantis here in Florida. Joining me to talk about this is author, writer, and now, of course, YouTube channel Cliff Schechter. Cliff.
From what I heard, that's where all the cool people go is YouTube. So yeah. That's where I went.
And I'm loving it. It's youtube.com/C Schechter. The letter C, then Schechter. Everybody yes. Check it out. Great channel, Cliff. Always a great guy. And of course, you're a favorite here at Ring of Fire. So welcome back.
Thank you.
We have so much to talk about right now. And I love talking with you because we always just kind of go everywhere in our conversation. So it's so much fun, but let's start right here where I am in the state of Florida. A ton of really just absolutely obscene abuses of power taking place in this state right now. And a lot of it, of course, does have to do with what I see as Ron DeSantis trying to out Trump. Yes. I think that's what's behind most of what we see right now.
Oh, I would say almost all of it. I mean, the sad thing, you know, I've talked about this a bunch, is that it's not policy anymore at this point. I'm not sure what I'm allowed to say on this channel, so I'll be careful with the words I use. But it's really, honestly, the Republican primaries are about who's a bigger a-hole, is what they're about. It's about who can be the nastiest, the cruelest, who can ignore democracy and take dictatorial-like power to beat down. We were talking about it a little earlier about bullying. Who can bully, you know, anybody from kids up on a stage who are wearing masks, which DeSantis did only a month ago or whatever, to bullying, you know, companies that don't toe the line. And I mean, that's the thing, is he's performing right now. He's performing for what Trump has radicalized, Trump and Fox and others have radicalized the Republican base into, which are these, they're like, you have to imagine like the people underneath the stairs now or something. They're like these creatures, these fire-breathing creatures that just want vitriol and they want to see someone getting hurt. I mean, I hate that it's this way, but this is the truth. And DeSantis is literally just playing to that. That's what all of this is about.
Well, and, you know, DeSantis, like so many other Republican governors, obviously a lot of it all throughout the South and the Midwest, they had kind of all been going back and forth. You know, Georgia does something extreme, Florida does it, Texas does it, then Oklahoma. But really within the last month, Florida here has just taken every piece of it and put it on steroids. Like, okay, Texas, you've got an abortion ban. Well, guess what? We're going to go more extreme than that. Oh, right. You're banning critical race theory, whatever they think critical race theory is, up in Tennessee. Well, guess what? We're not only going to do that, we're going to ban math books because don't understand. I mean, he just wants to
They're filled with CRT, though, so be careful.
and it is ridiculous. In fact, the banning of those math books is based on a Photoshopped image that Christina Pushaw, I guess, saw online. And she's sharing it. She's like, here it is. And the funniest part is even the photoshopped image isn't even critical race theory. It's actually just talking about Maya Angelou.
It's right. So ridiculous. Exactly. It's not critical race theory. And in the end, it wasn't part of the book either.
Yeah.
It was like something that a company put up, like a spread or a worksheet that they, and they took it down.
And so that's what they're, you know, that's their justification for it, of course. But they don't even need justification. They can just come out and do these things. And far too many people in these states will be like, yes, this is what we want. And meanwhile, we actually have very real problems all throughout the country, a lot of it at the state level. And that ends up getting blamed on Biden. You know, we see down here in Florida, our prices are skyrocketing, not due to inflation, due to corporate greed. Well, they're blaming Biden. DeSantis is blaming Biden. But those are his problems that he has let fester. And it's just, oh, no, I'm focusing on math books. Biden's the one to blame for all these price increases you're paying.
Right. Excuse me. And, of course, you know, part of that's also Greg Abbott blocking the trucks from coming in with food and foods being spoiled. I mean, they're just such evil people. I don't know what else to call them. And the thing is you're right. DeSantis is in the lead now, but it's like a constant horse race with DeSantis and Abbott, each trying to, of course, my phone rings, each trying to be more nasty than the other. Because in the end, look, there are some others that are trying to compete. Kim Reynolds up in Iowa, or what's her name? The cowboy hat wearing one, Gnome, in South Dakota. But those aren't big states. Those aren't states that like Republicans need to hold on to or need to win. They can try all they want. It doesn't matter. It's not going to, you know, they're not going to be the ones to go to the front of the line. It's going to be DeSantis or Abbott because of the states they're from, because their personas, because of the guys they are. And so they're each trying to out-awful the other one. Because again, this sad state of affairs we've come to where literally that's how you get a Republican nomination is by being a more awful human being. And you're right. I mean, DeSantis, it's like one thing after another, the abortion ban and the math books. And now today taking away the, taking away the Disney's special tax, status. There'll be something else tomorrow and the next day. And because that's it. It's all just about playing to the mouth breathers and being a Republican nominee for president.
And here's the thing though. And you know, you touched on this when you have Abbott actually doing these things. You have DeSantis actually doing these things. And then you compare that with Donald Trump. What is Donald Trump doing? Well, Donald Trump is going out there still crying about the 2020 election and getting in fights with his friends. That's bad for Trump. Because when suppose we actually have a real Republican primary in 2024 and you put these people up on stage, Abbott gets to brag about the things he actually did. DeSantis will do the same. Ted Cruz, I'm sure, will attempt to. But then Trump has nothing. And that is actually what is starting to worry some of those advisors in Trump world, saying, these people are accomplishing things. You're still talking about something that's now 18 months old that nobody wants to hear about anymore. And that's why I do think DeSantis has emerged as the new Trump. And honestly, probably a far more dangerous Trump because he is accomplishing these things.
Correct. First of all, Trump, part of Trump's obsessiveness, nastiness, vindictiveness, you know, was a lot of what was appealing to people. But they're all, you know, in that Republican base. But there always were these times where he took certain things too far because he was so obsessed with them that nobody else cared about. Remember I'm talking about like the toilets flushing constantly, like the water in the toilets is terrible. Everybody's like, what are you talking about? Dude, like, go take your meds and take a nap or something, man. Well, this is, you know, he can't let the election go because it's part of his ego. It's like this, it's the double-edged sword of his obsessions, which worked for him at times, but now he can't let it go. Most people on the Republican Party didn't want to hear this anymore 6 months after the election. It's the reason why he unendorsed, you know, Mo Brooks, who was one of his most staunch defenders in Alabama, because Mo Brooks is like, why are we still talking about this? Even the other crazy people have looked at Donald Trump and said, you're freaking crazy. And so I do. I think there's even a point where these right-wing nuts are like, you know, are at a place where the rest of us were at, like right after the election. They're like, okay, enough. Talk about what, you know, do things and talk about what you're going to do. And DeSantis is doing that. They're awful things. He's hurting people. He basically whistled past the graveyard on COVID and let God knows how many people die. You know, he and Abbott can have a die-off where they can see Abbott and be like, I let more people die when I didn't fix the power lines, or I let more people die when I, you know, when I did this. Or, I mean, they're both awful human beings, but they're doing things, right? They're doing things that their you know, base, their bloodlust base wants. So I agree. All Trump's doing is just hanging out, you know, eating potato chips and sweating at Mar-a-Lago. And so I do. I think his advisors are very worried. It was interesting. I'll say this quickly, Farron. You know, he did bring up, like, I don't remember when this was, a couple weeks ago, when they asked if he was going to run for re-election. I found it really interesting that for the first time he was like, well, if my health is up to it. Trump would never, ever bring that up unless that was a way of him getting out of doing something he didn't want to do. This is the guy, strong like Tiger, that, you know, drunk Ronnie Jackson was saying was going to live till he was like 380, till he's like Methuselah or something, right? But now he's saying his health. I have a feeling he's worried he's going to lose to these guys, and he's putting up an out ramp if he needs it.
Right. And yeah, I agree with you 100%, because I think even if Trump had health problems, I mean, he would never admit it, you know.
Right.
So him actually bringing that up, it does raise a red flag, not because I think you have health. Well, I do think you have health issues. Don't get me wrong. But I don't think you would ever, like, he could have a tumor growing out of the back of his head with its own face on it, and he would still run for office, and everybody would say that's how a head is supposed to look. So him talking about that, I do think he sees himself diminishing in power. He'll never admit it. But I think another very telling thing was this past weekend, and we got to see the video all over social media, Roger Stone walking up to Trump at Mar-a-Lago with the, hey, how you doing? Pulls him in close, as Ron DeSantis is a piece of shit. Okay.
Yep.
You know, I would love to know the rest of that conversation, because obviously the camera's cut off. But Trump understands. He has people telling him, like, this guy,
Yep.
Roger Stone doesn't
inevitable.
Think he is, but it's Roger Stone thinks this guy's going to beat you, and you're doing nothing about it.
Right. I mean, and look, it's inevitable. I mean, look at any despotic regime, right? Like, if you're the number two guy, if you were next to Saddam Hussein or Idi Amin or Mao, at some point, like, you know, you see them looking at you a little funny, you're like, they're probably going to kill me. You know, like they love them. You know, he endorsed DeSantis initially for governor. They love them until they get to the point where they get their own media and they start getting powerful and they become a threat. So Trump loved the guy, you know, when he was president. Once he was gone, all these guys were going to jockey for power, because that's all they care about in the end. I mean, they've proven it once again, right? Like, we were talking as the show was starting about these attacks on Disney. You know, they claim they're for free markets. They're not for free markets. They're not for balanced budgets. They're not for being tough on Russia. They're not for any number of things they say they're for. What they are for in the end is, like, doing whatever is advantageous to hold and gain power. And right now, DeSantis and Abbott and sure others, but they're the two, I think, at the front because of where they're from, like, they see this opportunity. And so I think you've got purposely, you know, Roger Stone saying that to make sure the media can hear it. You know, like, he's trying in his own way, Trump is, to diminish DeSantis. I'm not sure what he can do from there to do it. You know, maybe he's still got friendly people in various prosecutors' offices and he can get some you know, investigations started. But, and I think, actually, I should say quickly, that's the other problem, is I think a lot of other Republicans are just tired of all the legal stuff. They're tired of the fact that the Attorney General in New York and the January 6th committee and, you know, the DOJ and Fulton County in Georgia, and just there's a billion different investigations into Trump, and, like, none of them are, they should be investigations into Abbott for why he didn't go and make sure that the power lines could survive a winter storm. There should be investigations into DeSantis, why he hid science and hid the number of people dying and did things so more people died of COVID. I can think of a lot of investigations of both those guys that should be happening, but there aren't any that I'm aware of. So, like, all these legal troubles around Trump, and I think a lot of other conservatives, particularly the funders, they're just like, we don't need this. You know what I mean?
Well, and, you know, you and I actually had a very interesting conversation a couple days ago, you know, not on Ring of Fire here, but just a friendly chat. And you and I got into the issue. Obviously, we talk about Republicans a lot, but we also started talking about people like Joe Manchin. You know,
yep.
Manchin is a huge problem for the Democratic Party in getting anything at all done. Kyrsten Sinema, same way. So, of course, we look at the Republicans and we see this utter insanity of them actually doing things to harm us. Like, they're mm-hmm. causing real harm. So, on the Democratic side, we have people blocking progress. You know, it prevents us from moving forward, but hey, at least it's not us moving backwards. And I bring that up to bring up this point. You don't like Joe Manchin. I don't like Joe Manchin.
No.
Everybody outside of West Virginia does not like Joe Manchin.
I think a lot of people even in West Virginia. And in fact, he got into a lawsuit with his brother over some finances. His own brother doesn't like him. So, you know, just to be clear.
And the problem is the voters in West Virginia, unfortunately, do. And yeah. So we're looking at a situation right now. And this is what people have to understand, whether it's the Republicans or Democrats. Oh, we don't have our preferred candidate. We need somebody that's more progressive or somebody that every place is different. You cannot run a campaign with a, you know, Bernie Sanders, who I supported, but you couldn't run Bernie Sanders in my district where Matt Gaetz is running and have him win. You simply could not do it.
Nope.
So as bad as Joe Manchin is, and I want him out of office, it's not going to happen. And if it does happen, you end up with somebody worse than Joe Manchin. And as you and I had discussed, a lot of it has to do with I'm in Florida, a red state. You're in Ohio, a true swing state. We're both
in what 8 years ago were swing states that now, if we're being honest, we'd call reddish purple states.
Yeah.
Democrats can still win, but we lean red.
But we get to see firsthand really both sides. And
yes.
So we, and I'm not saying you and I are just, we're the best because of this. But it is
no, we're the best for a lot of other reasons.
It's a different perspective than what some of these other folks get. If you're in your, you know, very liberal LA bubble, of course you think that, you know, everything is liberal and everything is great and we can be more liberal. But when you're out here in red state America, it sucks to have to say it, but I'm telling you, you can't. You know?
You need a coalition. That's the whole thing about democracy. Look, Joe Manchin is uniquely terrible. Okay, he's uniquely terrible in that I honestly think Kyrsten Sinema may have caved if Manchin weren't standing there in the way that he was. He has harmed us. I mean, some folks were asking questions like, can you think of a past case where one Democratic senator did this much damage? Because that's one of the reasons that Biden's approval rating has fallen and some of the other things have happened. And again, you know, you need to be able to, what so many people can't do in politics is separate emotion from analysis.
Yeah.
My emotion is I can't stand Joe Manchin. My analysis is if I'm voting for him or a Republican and he's the 50th vote, I'm voting for him. Like, I mean, I don't understand that there's not even a debate to be had here. I mean, what in your state, Nikki Fried has done some controversial things over the past couple of days.
Oh, I know.
I think what she's doing is self-immolation to her campaign and completely inane. But if she's the nominee over Annette Tadeo and Charlie Crist, who I think are the three, maybe I'm missing one or two other folks running, that's who I'm supporting if I live in Florida. Like, these are not hard decisions. You can't make decisions like you make. Like, you know, here's what somebody always said to me, an old political consultant I was friends with, who's like, you're voting for who best represents your values. You're not marrying them. Okay? Like, you're not saying you love Joe Manchin or Nikki Fried. You don't have to spend the rest of your lives with them. But my God, look at what the Republican Party has done. So, you even need to separate the situations like themselves. I mean, so what do I mean by that? Kyrsten Sinema, when she's up in 2024, she's got something like a 12% approval rating in the Democratic Party, right? In Arizona. Arizona's trending Democratic. Biden won there. We've won the last two Senate races. We've won a couple other statewide races. She can be tossed in a primary and we can get somebody more progressive in Arizona. And she should be. So that's a realistic analysis, not based on my emotion, because I can't stand either of them. But a realistic analysis of West Virginia is it's like the third most Republican state, I think, in the country. I think Trump got 67% or 8 or whatever there. We're not getting anybody else besides Joe Manchin, who's a Democrat. So if Joe is Manchin's that last one who's going to give us that extra vote, we got to keep him. If you want to say we don't need them anymore, if we can knock off, you know, used car salesman Marco Rubio in your state and the two lunatics, we can hold off J.D. Vance and Josh Mandel and put Tim Ryan in office in this state and a bunch of others, and then we end up having 54, 55 senators. Yeah, at that point, you may consider Manchin not worth the trouble. But if he's the 50th or 51st or something vote, we need him. And, like, people need to understand that.
Yeah, and of course, just like we do, continue call him out every time he does these things.
But absolutely.
The best bet is not to replace him with, you know, the next Jeff Merkley or Elizabeth Warren. The best bet is to get is to make him irrelevant, like you said.
Yes.
You know, have enough Democrats where if Manchin says, I'm going to vote with Republicans, it's all right, we... whatever, go do your thing, man. We're not even
no one was talking to you anyhow.
Yeah. So that's the goal here. And again, the reason it is important is because of what we are fighting on this other side, with people yes. literally fighting to live their lives as who they are. And they're not even yes. allowed. I mean, Florida this week, you know, after the math books, after the Disney thing, then the health department issues this new decree where you can't even... you can't change a kid's pronouns. You can't let them change a pronouns. You can't let them change clothing to the opposite gender. We have now, from the state health department, and this just...
are you serious?
Yes, you cannot wear the opposite gender's clothing for these kids and send them out. It's...
What would glam metal bands do?
Yeah.
Like, my 15-year-old is a drummer in a rock band and loves Aerosmith and, like, Guns N' Roses. And, like, sometimes because of that, he's, like, worn, like, women's leather coats and things because it's cool stuff. So, seriously, if he were in your state, they would... what would they do? Would they grab my kid and, like, rip the clothes off him? Are they crazy?
That's the level of insanity that these Republicans are inflicting upon people. And so we have to understand that, listen, Manchin sucks. Is he better than every Republican out there? I think so, yes. And yep. I've often said, you know, Manchin actually just was down here in Florida, I think this past weekend, at a massive Republican fundraiser. They were raising money for him. And they want him to run as a Republican in 2024. And I talked about this in a segment. I said... I would not want him to be a Republican president, but I guarantee you if he were, he'd be the best Republican president that we have had in, you know, 60 years.
Yes.
Because he's...
certainly since, like, Gerald Ford, I would say.
Yeah.
In terms of how moderate, yeah.
But he's still probably worse than all of the Democrats, better than all of the Republicans, so he's in this weird situation. Same thing with Sinema. Yes, she needs to get out of office. We need to do something about that. But we also...
if she's the nominee and you live in Arizona and it's her versus a Republican,
yeah.
you must... I mean, you're crazy not to vote for her again. Like, this is not about your personal anger. It's not about, like, your resentment for these people for how they behave. I have all of that, too. But in the end, think about, like, you know, what bills get passed. And think about the fact that how close we were to, you know, and not... I mean, we had... at least three Republican votes, thankfully, but we maybe could have not gotten our Supreme Court justice on the court. You know, like, these things matter. And so, you know, separate, you know, as they used to say, compartmentalize it. Over here, you know, you can hate Manchin and Sinema as much as you want, but when it comes time to vote, if they are the nominee, and I think there's a good chance that you can stop Sinema from being the nominee if you're yeah. in Arizona and get somebody better like Ruben Gallego, who's been making noises about primarying her. But I promise you, unless, like, something insane happens, the level of, like, the aliens from Independence Day coming down right now, you're not going to get a better Democrat than Joe Manchin in West Virginia. You're just not, because Democrats are an endangered species there. They barely exist.
Well, and, you know, it's things like that, too, that really kind of bug me, I guess I would say. Like with Mitch McConnell and his Senate race. I forget who the Democrat was up against him.
Amy McGrath.
And there's all of this money, millions and millions and millions of dollars flowing from all over the country into Amy McGrath. And nothing against her. I know she was a very conservative Democrat. But at the same time, you're not going to unseat Mitch McConnell. You're absolutely not. They love him in Kentucky. I mean, each state is so different. And I do wish people got out a little bit more, whereas down here in Florida, Yes, DeSantis, his approval rating is over 50%, but it is below 60%. So there's room. There is room.
And we need to do better, you know, our side in getting the message out there about who he is. Some of this is on us, you know, and yeah. I don't blame you and me. I can blame myself for plenty of things, so I'm not making excuses. But there are actual groups tied to the Democratic Party whose job it is to do these things. And I don't know what they're doing. Pick the three narratives you want to tell about him, because there's 15 different negative ones. Pick the three that are easy for people to remember and go at them and repeat them every day, every minute, constantly. You can knock that guy's approval rating below 50%. You really can. It's not Alabama. It's not Kentucky. It's Florida. You lean what? 3 points Republican or something like that at this point. Maybe less, you know, and that's where we are too here. Sherrod Brown wins here because he knows how to run here. You know, I mean, we elected a Supreme Court justice here last year, statewide. She knew Jennifer Bruner. She knew how to run here. She was a former Secretary of State and had some name recognition and ran a smart race. Like, we can do it. You guys can do it. You elected statewide Democrats. Like, you know, just please, the organizations whose job it is to message, can you guys, like, go and tell people the true story of DeSantis? You know, please?
Yeah.
We're begging you.
And you know, I'll tell you another thing we need is we need more Stacey Abrams. We absolutely need what she did in Georgia. And yes, I'm giving her almost all of the credit for that. Is nothing short of miraculous, but it's also proof that, look, when you put in this groundwork, and it took years of groundwork, this is not just something you pop in for 3 months for an election and say, I'm changing things. She worked for so long and so hard to actually change things, and it worked. And that's why the Republicans in Georgia panicked. They passed that hugely, you know, suppressive new voting law. And it was basically because Stacey Abrams.
She was so successful.
Yep. She got up and she did something. She didn't sulk after her loss. She didn't sit there and say, oh, well, this group didn't come out, or this group was too mean to me. It was none of that. It was like, you know what? All right, fine. I'm going to change the state. I'm going to make things better. You know, none of this. The establishment was against me. The progressives were against, you know, we spend so much time, I think, on the left blaming one another instead of doing what Stacey.
And our labels are actually often so stupid.
They truly are.
Because you could, if you looked at who I've worked for in my record, you know, and everything, I wrote ads for Joe Biden this past time. I'm establishment. But then I also did work for Ned Lamont when he took on Joe Lieberman and tried to kick him out. I'm progressive, you know, like, I mean, in the end, I consider myself progressive, but I also consider myself a Democrat. And Democrats, as you pointed out before, will always be better than Republicans. Always. So, you know, you work for who's there, and you work, I mean, again, who is the best person of who's available? This is not like, you know, we're not in Disney World. Sorry, I just got that in there. Where everything's perfect and wonderful, except for, you know, in Ron DeSantis's world, where dreams come true or whatever. You're in a world where you have a set number of candidates, and whoever the best one is in your estimation, that's as good as it's going to get. And they may disagree with you on a half dozen issues or a dozen issues or whatever, but okay. Like, you go and you do your best, because if they will make things a little bit better, or a lot better than the person who's there now, than the Republican. I mean, it's common sense. And I just wish people would step back from all the emotion and name calling you pointed out. Progressive establishment, blah, blah. You're evil. You suck. You know, you didn't get behind Bernie. You didn't get behind Hillary. I mean, can we just let all that stupid stuff go? We're on the same side. We want the same things. You know, even if we don't always believe in exactly the same way to get there. Like, the end goals are the same, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I still to this day don't understand what all the anti-Elizabeth Warren stuff was about in 2020. I still don't get that. I mean, there's so many people out there that are still like, oh, I can't believe she she didn't endorse Bernie when you wanted her to. Besides, what does that mean? That all of her policies, which I got to tell you, policy wise, in 2020, she was kind of, you know, really the top.
She owned it, man.
She did.
Some of her policies are still, that she came up with, are still out there debated now. Things like the wealth tax and other things. We're talking about stuff that she came up with.
People want to hate her. I guess that's your choice. I love her. I don't hold anything against her. She did what she chose to do. And if you want to go out there and whine and moan about something Elizabeth Warren did or didn't do at a certain time that pleased you, well, guess what? Get the hell out of the way, because you're a Joe Manchin, just in a different way. You're the one blocking progress at this point.
Yeah, I don't really care if you come from the far, what's called either the radical left or the radical center. Like, if you're in either wing of the Democratic Party where you're blocking things from happening because you're too good for the rest of us, we're all too left for you, or we're all too corporate for you, or whatever your insult du jour is, well, then you're the problem. You know, there used to be an old saying, and I heard you curse, so I know I can say it, which is, if you walk around all day, every day, you know, and you're like, wow, that guy's an asshole, that guy's an asshole, and everybody else is an asshole, it turns out you're the asshole. That's the actual truth if you find enough other people, because it says something about you. So you know what? Like, let that stuff go. Elizabeth Warren may not have done exactly what you wanted when you wanted her to do it. I may not agree with Elizabeth Warren 100% of policies. I'm sure I don't. Don't care. She's done a great job. She's come up with a lot of great stuff. I would have been happy to support her for president. I'm happy to support her right now. You know, hell, if she wanted to be Senate Majority Leader right now, count me as somebody who would jump in behind there and be very excited about it. But, I mean, you know, just save the ire for the people that are trying to turn us into a fascist country, please.
Yeah.
Like, save the ire for the authoritarians who are trying to overthrow democracy. I mean, come on.
You know, it really is amazing. You know, you can either waste all your time complaining that we, you know, don't have student loan debt forgiveness yet, which I talk about that all the time too. We need it.
Sure.
We should have it. But you can either piss and moan about that and go pout, or you can also say, well, we may not have student loan debt forgiveness, but they're literally killing people over here on this other side. They're taking away suicide prevention protection from this other side. They're going to be killing women with their policies. So I guess I'm okay, you know, with not having the debt forgiveness, if it means saving lives of people over here. I mean, it's such a
perspective,
really,
is what's really, really needed here. And beyond even those lives, every single thing that we care about, every single thing that we want to see happen during our lifetimes, if we lose our democracy, none of that happens.
Right.
If we become like, no, do I think we're going to probably become like a Nazi Germany? I don't. Could I see us becoming Hungary? Absolutely. There's a reason they love Orban. He took a liberal democracy and he turned it to an illiberal democracy. Oh, they still have elections and people still get elected. Look at your state legislatures, your gerrymandered state legislatures. It's like that. You'll still elect. I mean, I'm talking about Ohio, you know, where they're still trying to fight fair maps that we should have. You know, out of 99 state house members or whatever it is, yeah, we'll still elect 35 who are complete liberals. They'll just will never be enough to actually do anything that we want done. That is an illiberal democracy. You keep having elections, there's the facade during a democracy, but then you have stuff like that happen. You have 35-year-old, you know, who look like they're 12, you know, judges who know nothing about health policy, overturning, you know, mask requirements on airplanes. So somebody who was rated not qualified by the ABA, somebody who had never tried a case before and never has in her life, you know, was probably still coloring in crayon books when Trump came in and said, we're going to make her a judge. And those Republicans who were just so freaked out about Ketanji Brown Jackson's qualifications, even though she was more qualified than all of them put together, public defender and all the things she did, they had no problems rubber stamping the Mizell, I guess is her name, this judge at the age of 33 to put her on a court when she had literally not even sure she knew what the law was. You know what I mean? Like, have you seen that decision?
Oh, yeah. And she'll be there for, you know, as long as her health keeps
2070?
Up. 50 years. I mean, you know, maybe 60 years, depending on how far medical advancements come. And
I will likely be dead, and she'll still be on that court. And of old age, if I'm lucky enough to get there.
And that's what's so terrifying about this. And you know what? Just one final point here. When you bring up Ketanji Brown Jackson, that's a good example of probably like the most progressive pick Biden could have done for the Supreme Court. You know, there were plenty of other, you know, more corporatist people. So you also can't just say, well, Biden's not progressive enough. Look, he's not progressive enough on certain things. Sure. But we got a massive win with that Supreme Court pick. And that is something everybody should celebrate, you know, for so many different reasons, but especially the public defender background. Yep. Representation matters. Somebody coming from that background matters. And that is a huge deal.
And where she is, you are 100% right that she's probably going to join. She's a brilliant jurist also, and she's probably going to join Sotomayor as this sort of conscience, I can say the word right, of the Supreme Court. We'll have now these two strong female women of color left voices speaking out who know what they're talking about because who've had to go through things. Most of us, me and you certainly haven't had to go through in our lives to get to where they are. And I'm sorry, unless you have to kick me off for time quickly, because I just get so tired of it. Is Biden perfect? You know, this and that, whatever. The number of executive orders on climate, on guns that have improved things. That COVID bill was one of the biggest bills and most successful bills since LBJ in terms of child tax credit, in terms of getting shots into arms. So at least even with anti-vaxxers, we got closer to 70%, which reinvigorated our economy to the point where we're at 3.6% unemployment. And, you know, we were creating 500,000 jobs a month. He helped pass an infrastructure bill with Republicans to actually do it. That we have two bridges near here in Cincinnati that were considered structurally unsound. I haven't driven over them in years because I don't want my kids to go flying into the water. And they're now fixing them with that money. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, and that's creating jobs for people too. I'm not saying he's perfect, but my God, to act like this guy hasn't come in and done a bunch of very progressive things is just to not tell the truth.
There are plenty of accomplishments, but part of the reason why people aren't talking about these is because the Democrats are also terrible at messaging.
Well, that's a whole other conversation. We suck.
Because those are the things that should be running in ads right now. And you know, another message for the Democratic Party, you don't have to wait for campaigns to run ads. You know, you can buy airtime at any point in any year. And
it's like available and you can purchase it with like goods and services and like the whole economy and everything. I mean, you're so right. I didn't mean to cut you off, but like,
it's fine.
You went into one of my areas because I just lose it on this, like paid media, but not even that. You can like have a press conference a week to tell you, here's the terrible stuff the Republicans did this week. We're going to come out in front of Congress, and in every state house where you've got a gerrymandered state house, we're going to have Democrats come out and hold a press conference. You can come up with interesting events. Like we did events here, you know, in 2018 to get media attention. We had a big Trump chicken we brought out.
Yeah.
Things that will get the media's attention so that they actually pay attention to stuff. You can do that. Like you can do paid media. You can do earned media. You can do social media. You can be on there every day with the same tweets saying to people, here's a reminder of what Biden has done. Here's a reminder of what Trump did. So it doesn't go down the memory hole. Like you can be doing these things constantly. It's called messaging. It's marketing 101. Please.
Well, I mean, that's why Trump, every time he's in front of a camera, says the 2020 election was stolen. And now you have a majority of Republicans that actually do believe it. So maybe Democrats, maybe use some of their strategy, not, of course, to lie to people.
Right. So he lied about that. So what if every time Biden and everybody got in front of a camera, we just said we have the best jobs economy in 60 years, which is true. What if we just said that every time?
That would
seem to be a good idea.
We could. And if they want to, you know, go the route of lying, Biden could go up there and just be like, hey, you know what? There's no unemployment. Everybody in this country has a job. I mean, no, he shouldn't.
That's true.
But really, with the amount of lies coming from the other side, because that's all they have, the Democratic messaging just, I mean, it doesn't exist. And as you've just kind of pointed out, like there are so many things to do. So, hey, strategists, lobbyists, whoever you are, if you're watching, if you're listening, there you go. There's Jeez, lots
do it
to do.
In a coordinated way with paid and earned and social all coordinated and spokespeople out there and policy initiatives and everything and make it all into a narrative about who you are. What's your story? Here's who we are. Here's what we came into and fixed. Here's the bad guys. They did these terrible things. We're the good guys. We came in, we fixed those things. And here's three examples. And your life is better because of it. This like, it just drives me nuts. It's not difficult and we don't do it. And it's, and that's why you're right. And that's why people, it's why some of the reason Biden's numbers are so low. I mean, there's other reasons. Mainstream media is awful and the right wing media lies all the time. But you know what? Like, here's my hope. Democrats can just tell the truth as often and effectively as Republicans lie. That's all I want out of life.
And it's,
if we could just do that.
Yeah. It's very easy to do, but for some reason we're not doing it. Hey, Cliff Schechter, the YouTube channel is youtube.com/C Schechter.
And Schechter is S-C-H-E-C-T-E-R. We cut off the second H on the boat over from, by the way, Odessa, one of the places that Putin has chosen to attack. So I take it even more personally. But yeah, it's youtube.com/C Schechter, S-C-H-E-C-T-E-R. We'll be doing a lot of commentaries today. I can't promise you I'll be nearly as good as Farron because Farron is Farron, but I will do my best. Please come by and check the channel out.
Absolutely. And Cliff, again, you're welcome here anytime. We love having you on. This has been a wonderful conversation today. We covered so much more than I even thought we would, but all of it very informative, all of it fun. And I hope everybody enjoyed it. And again, if you want more of it, youtube.com/C Schechter. Follow him on Twitter at Cliff Schechter, I believe it is.
That's right. Yep.
I knew your name. so thank you, Cliff,
it's
so
a
much.
Start, baby.
And
thanks, buddy. I really appreciate it.
We will have you on again. Thank you.
Sounds like a plan. Take care.
Donald Trump has basically turned himself into what he thinks is a kingmaker for the Republican Party. If you want to run, you got to get that endorsement. But as we're starting to see, some of those endorsements are not only not working out for Donald Trump, but they're also creating a lot of chaos in Trump world. Joining me now to talk about this is Heather Digby Parton from Salon.com. Heather, you're a fan favorite, obviously, here at Ring of Fire. You've been on this show, gosh, more times than we could even count. So thank you for joining me again.
My pleasure.
And, you know, we did get an interesting report this week about what it takes when you go down to Mar-a-Lago, like the kind of presentation you have to put together for Donald Trump. And I think it's hilarious because it's exactly what you would expect. So if you were going down to Mar-a-Lago, what do you need to have, I guess, on your PowerPoint that you got to show Donald Trump in his little office there?
Well, according to this, there was a New York Times article this week with Josh Dawsey, who apparently is spending a lot of time down at Mar-a-Lago. I guess that's Washington Post. Sorry. And he did a report on what it's like, on what they're doing as far as these endorsements. There's a lot of things that you have to do. You need to get a Sherpa of some sort, somebody to kind of guide you through. And they're selling access. You know, look, I can get the pres to do this for you. But the big thing is that if you're going to do a presentation to the president, there are some very specific guidelines. You have to have big font on your presentation, bright colors. And you have to do it, you know, you have to do, basically you have to do it like you're teaching a second grade class, I think. That's basically what you have to do. So people are actually doing these things. I mean, these are people running for the U.S. Senate are going down there with these PowerPoint presentations in big font and bright colors to explain to Donald Trump why that he should endorse them. And the thing is that I don't know how they do this. I'd love to see one of those presentations, but it's pretty clear that what you have to do is pledge fealty to Donald Trump. I mean, the whole that there's, I don't know what, show a picture of yourself, you know, washing his feet or something. I mean, I don't even know what it could be, but whatever it is, that is what he's looking for. That's all he cares about. And, you know, there's no policy discussions. That's really completely off the table, by the way. Any Republicans running that want Donald Trump's endorsement, forget policy. Well, look at Herschel Walker in Georgia. That tells you everything you need to know because the man knows absolutely nothing about policy. So, and he's one of Trump's favorites. So, you know, it's quite an elaborate thing. And apparently he's meeting with people virtually every day. And it's from the top down. It's from Senate races all the way down to local races and, you know, in the election board members and secretaries of state, things like that. And that's for obvious reasons. I mean, we know why he's meeting with those people. He's basing it purely on gut instinct, it sounds like.
And, you know, there was a report that came out last year that examined every single person that Donald Trump has endorsed for office. And what they found was when you receive that Trump endorsement, your chances of winning that race, regardless of what they were prior to the endorsement, fall immediately below 50%. Not only that, even if it raises your fundraising numbers, the greater benefit goes to your opponent, who ends up raising more money. So these endorsements are actually really bad for these candidates. Even if you're polling above 50%, when you receive that endorsement, it drops you below a 50% chance of winning, because he is really bad at picking people to endorse. And we are starting to see that the folks down there in Trump world, and it all, you know, really came to a head with this Dr. Oz endorsement he just did. They're starting to freak out. Like, you can't just give this out willy-nilly, because if you continue to lose, you could end up losing everything. And that, of course, means, you know, even a primary in 2024. So they're starting to get worried for him, because this isn't looking good. And he's already had, what, I think, three different people that he's endorsed have now been at least accused of some form of horrendous abuse.
Yeah.
And that doesn't sit well with some of his advisors at this point.
Well, they're worried. I don't think there's any doubt that they're worried. And the party is worried, at least part of the party. The party that still is somehow got at least one foot in the real world recognizes that they have a perfect storm here coming in November if they want it. I'm sure you've discussed this many times on the show. I mean, the situation that we're in, it's not going to be an easy election for Democrats. And Republicans should be feeling pretty confident. But I saw a thing with Mitch McConnell. They're particularly worried about the Senate. I saw a thing with Mitch McConnell a week or so ago in which he said, hey, look, you know, we should be sailing through. This should be like 1994. This should be that good unless we have unacceptable candidates. Those were the words he used, unacceptable candidates. And he knows what he's talking about there. And he brought up, he said, you know, 2010 and 2012, we had problems because of this. And you remember that, you know, Todd Akin and legitimate rape and I'm Not a Witch, Christine O'Donnell and this, what was her name, Sharon Angle out there in Nevada. I mean, they had some real, you know, fringe characters running and they lost and it didn't bode well. I mean, they ended up not getting the Senate when they expected to. So I think that is weighing heavily on Mitch McConnell's mind, because this is not a good map for Republicans. It's only the circumstances in the political environment that makes it even really look good for him, because way more Republicans are up for reelection than Democrats. And they've got to turn over, you know, they've got to turn over at least one seat in order to win. And it seems obvious to me that he's not sure that that's going to happen, because Dr. Oz, look at this guy this week, J.D. Vance, or I guess it was Friday night, that J.D. Vance in Ohio. Now, that race, you know, he could have stayed out of that and still been a big winner and said, yeah, that guy's mine, whatever. At the end of the day, he could have still claimed any one of those people, because they were all crawling all over broken glass, sorry about that, to get to him and to try and get his endorsement. And yet he, you know, went ahead and endorsed J.D. Vance. And this backstory is pretty clear, that Peter Thiel, the Silicon Valley billionaire who's been backing J.D. Vance, has been, you know, in Trump's ear and really trying to get him to do it. And he convinced him that J.D. Vance was, you know, that he was going to put a lot of money behind him. And I think that convinced Trump finally. And Trump also believes that any celebrity, even Herschel Walker, who is completely unqualified for any kind of political office, and Dr. Oz, who, you know, he's a TV guy. He's a TV doctor, TV quack doctor, as a matter of fact. And he said it, you know, you've had good ratings, and that's as good as a poll that says that people like you. That's what Trump said. So J.D. Vance has a kind of celebrity because he's a writer and he wrote that book and they made a movie out of it. You know, so that's the kind of thing that Trump would be impressed by. But, you know, he didn't need to do that, but he did it anyway. And it's almost as if there's a manic quality to what Trump is doing with these endorsements. It's almost as if he's really working overtime to get as many endorsements out there, even in places where he doesn't need to do it. He could, everybody on it is, you know, we love Trump. Trump is our God, you know, whatever. And he could claim them if whoever wins could say, well, he loves me. That's why he won. But he's not doing that. He's just got to get in there. And I find that very interesting. And it kind of tells me that, I mean, I think he's feeling a little bit insecure about where he sits in the party. I mean, I think he must be getting some kind of blowback, or not blowback so much, but a lot of people talking in his ear about these endorsements, and it's worrying him. So that, of course, this is Trump. So he doubles down and does exactly the opposite of what people say he should do. And so he's endorsing all these people. It's very interesting. I think that there is a chance that the Democrats could hold the Senate under these circumstances. With these kind of endorsements, these kind of people running, the inability to get the good people to run, McConnell has been really, you know, batting, you know, zero on getting good candidates. I mean, up in New Hampshire, he didn't manage to get Sununu to run, who was kind of a shoo-in if he had run. He was unable to get Larry Hogan in Maryland to run. Steve Ducey Governor Ducey, I can't remember which Ducey I'm talking about here, in Arizona, who he also wanted to run. And even though, or no, he hated him and wanted somebody else. But he's been very, you know, McConnell has not been able to get anybody to run that he wanted to, that he thought would be just a great chance. And that tells you something, too.
Well, and, you know, Mitch McConnell has really been struggling, I guess, to kind of hold on to that power. It does, you get the feeling a little bit he's losing control, especially with Rick Scott. You know, Mitch McConnell had made it clear, we're not putting out an agenda this year. We're not doing anything with that. Rick Scott comes out, says, hey, look, I've been here 2 years. I think I know my way around the place. And he puts out this plan that calls for raising taxes, sunsetting, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. And suddenly it tanks. Even Fox News called him out on that, and he tried to lie. And they said, no, it's in your plan, sir. You can't tell us it's not. I'm looking at it on the paper. And so that was a Mitch McConnell, like, I told you so moment. But he still did lose control of that. And now he has to play cleanup, just like he's playing cleanup with all of these awful endorsements. And he is right. I mean, this atmosphere right now is very, you know, beneficial, I guess, to Republicans. Mm-hmm. It is a lot like 1994, like he said. But taking back the House, okay, that almost feels like a given at this point. I think we're all kind of prepared that is a thing that's going to happen. But the Senate, as long as Trump keeps pushing these losers and these wackos, they not only might not take it back, but they could end up losing seats that really should have been slam dunks for them. I mean, Georgia and Pennsylvania, those were two that kind of seemed like, okay, this is going to be a Republican. But maybe not. I mean, if the Democrats can come out of this with 52, 53 seats.
Oh, my God.
That may negate some of the more corporatist folks who've been such a thorn in our side for the last year and a half. So this could end up totally being Mitch McConnell's worst case scenario, because taking back the House, okay, they can do some things with that. But if they don't get that Senate as well, the Democrats are still going to wield an awful lot of power, and it's not going to be a total loss in November. And Trump is going to be a big part of that. When this happens, you know, I think if it happens in the bad way, that is 100% something you can blame on Donald Trump. I don't think you could give him credit for a victory, but I do think he takes the blame for a loss.
I do, too. I mean, I certainly hope he does. I'm sure there will be people in the party who will say, oh, no, it was Mitch McConnell's fault or whatever. They'll find some reason to exonerate him, because that's just, you know, that's just the way it works with that guy. But I think that most, you know, any people who have any sense left are going to see that the kingmaker, you know, doesn't really have the juice that people think he does. And I think, I mean, he'll go out and say, I won anyway. I mean, it's the most astonishing thing about him. He'll just go, no, I won. I mean, all my people won. Every one of them, you know, you're going, wait a minute. No, they didn't. Yes, they did. And a lot of people go, see, he says they won. And, you know, I believe him. But he, you know, this is his MO, but I don't, you know, he's going to go into the election, and I'm sure he's running again. I mean, that seems obvious. Yeah. It's no doubt. And he's going to go into the election kind of carrying that around his neck a little bit, you know, if he's unable to actually pull it off. And it's one reason why I really would like hope the Democrats would kind of, I don't know, just get a recharge here or do something and recognize that, you know, they're not just playing for 2022 in this election. They're also playing for 2024. And it's not just a matter of, I mean, they're all walking around telling every reporter who'll listen that, you know, we've lost it all. It's all done. It's why even bother? I'm just not even going to try. You know, it's like, would you shut up, please? I mean, you just don't say that. But it is true that, I mean, this whole thing, it's of a big piece, right? I mean, this a lot has to do with the, you know, the assault on democracy, with the big lie, with the fact that they are setting up this whole, you know, new system within the Republican Party for challenging elections. And, you know, the more power you let them have here in this November, the more they're going to have in November of 2024. This is not, you know, the Democrats have to fight every step of the way. That's my feeling. This isn't a matter of just sort of going, well, you know, it's a midterm. This is what happens. Bob will regroup and come back, because they're setting up all this stuff to make it very, very difficult to come back. And so, you know, I'm looking at this with Trump and making these mistakes. I mean, to me, he's handing the Democrats a gift. It's not just him. Fox News, too. I mean, you got Tucker Carlson out there with, you know, testicle tanning and all this weird stuff that he's doing. I mean, it's like James Carville said this week. He goes, look, they're weirdos. These people are weirdos. And they are. And they're handing the Democrats a gift in very difficult circumstances. You know, they're like, the Democrats are, you know, Mariupol, and, you know, and it would be as if, you know, Putin was, you know, sort of parachuting in a bunch of weapons to them. I mean, that's what's happening here. And I'm hoping anyway that somehow or another that the strategists in the Democratic Party see this and recognize that this is the exploit. This is something they can exploit to their advantage, is the fact that Donald Trump is doing this stuff, you know, and it's more than just mocking him for the PowerPoints with the big font, although that's definitely worth doing. And there are people who do it well. But it's also about, you know, just kind of going, look, you know, we're running against somebody, and here's who it is. You know this guy, and you know the people he's choosing. Here's Herschel Walker. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, made his friends play Russian roulette. I mean, and has no idea about anything about policy. This is Dr. Oz, a quack doctor who, you know, was selling all kinds of snake oil on TV. I mean, these are things you can say. Hopefully they will. But, you know, they kind of need to get cracking here, because it's getting, you know, the campaign is in full swing. And maybe they're waiting to see who wins the primaries. I don't know.
They could be. But, yeah, I am a little perturbed at the kind of lack of messaging right now. There's so many things to be going after, just each and every one of these individuals for, and it's not happening yet. And kind of each day that goes by where you're not seeing these ads on TV, it's really starting to frustrate me. And, you know, we talk about Georgia a lot, and I think Georgia is an interesting case here, because, you know, Trump wants Brian Kemp out of office, the governor. He wants Brad Raffensperger out as Secretary of State. And in fact, was it a couple weeks ago, the first time ever Donald Trump gave away any of his $122 million that he is sitting on, he paid $500,000 to a group running anti-Brian Kemp ads in Georgia. So the only money he has spent has actually been to attack an incumbent Republican who, let's be totally clear, Brian Kemp is only governor of Georgia because when he ran, he was Secretary of State, purged enough voters to steal it from Stacey Abrams. So he's now back up against Stacey Abrams. She has been a hugely popular figure in Georgia, has been working her butt off the last few years. I mean, she is one of the big reasons we got those two Senate seats and the state as a whole. So if Trump bloodies up Kemp in this primary, you know, in favor of David Perdue, this is going to all benefit Stacey Abrams. So to me, that's almost one where Democrats, it's like, look, you just run your campaign. Trump's doing a lot of your dirty work for you. But then there's so many other places where get involved, start running some ads, go after these people, because this is a competitive area and you could win this. But yeah, Georgia is a great example of like Trump's doing all your dirty work. You just let him do that. And then we'll see what happens beyond.
Right. Don't get in his way because he's doing it. And that's another one of the, you know, and I didn't mention this, but it's an important one, maybe the most important reason, motivation for his endorsements. It's revenge. I mean, there's no reason for him to endorse any. He begged Perdue to get into the race, kind of twisted his arm to do it, and made him do, you know, you got to get out there and say that the election was stolen and all this stuff, which Perdue doesn't believe. We know that. He really, really hates Brian Kemp and Raffensperger. These two are his arch enemies. And this is basically purely based on revenge. And there are a number of races around the country that's what it is. In those cases, you're absolutely right. Let him do the dirty work. He's dirtying up the other guy, the guy that wins. If he wins, doesn't have the Trump, you know, mantle, and he's got a problem with the base and, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's the kind of infighting that is actually good for Democrats. And in other places, though, you have to make the case. You've got to draw people's attention to the fact that the person is, you know, completely unacceptable, which is in using Mitch McConnell's words.
And, you know, I think another problem Trump has right now, too, is the fact that he is starting to hold his rallies again. Actually, they just canceled whichever one he had coming up in Alabama, because that's a whole nother endorsement debacle that he's got there. But these rallies are getting smaller and smaller. And you're seeing thousands fewer than had shown up, even in places like the one recently in Selma, North Carolina. Almost a 10,000 attendee difference than it was just a few years ago. Now, you know, maybe it's because those 10,000 people who showed up last time but didn't show up this time, maybe they're no longer with us because of COVID. We don't know. I mean, you know, if you're supporting him, I'm sure you're not concerned about COVID. But the crowds are getting smaller, and that's a real problem too. And that is something that people do need to understand, right? He does not have this draw that he used to. I mean, sure, we do still see the diehards, don't get me wrong, but there's not quite as many as I think we're almost being led to believe there are, you know, and I see it every day. Obviously down here in Florida, we see the worst of the worst, but there's cracks. I mean, there's some very real cracks that I think a lot of even the media just kind of glosses over and pretends they don't exist. But out there in the real world, we're starting to see these. And if Republicans continue to ignore these, they could also be running into very big problems in November, which, hey, that's great. You know, please ignore it. But there's very real problems with Trump that they're just kind of whistling around and pretending they don't exist.
I agree with you. And I think that, you know, he is weaker. He seems weaker to me. I mean, when I hear him speak, and I unfortunately, because of my job, have to watch those rallies. And, you know, it's a lot of this is very stale material. And I also think that a lot of the, you know, what's happening with the, you know, the ongoing, you know, just endless discussion of the 2020 election, I think it's turning people off, even some of his own people. It's kind of like, you know, all right, we got it. We're with you. We know it was stolen, but, you know, I don't need to hear the details of the Mesa County, you know, the 2,200 votes that you say they found on Thursday. You know, I mean, this is the kind, and he's very into that minutia. I mean, this is just, he's obsessed with this, and he sends it out on his, I don't know if you're on his email list, but it's amazing. The stuff that he sends out on there, it's just like, are you kidding me? I mean, some, you know, very obscure stuff, anything to do with the 2020 election, he sends out. And I think people are kind of getting a little bit tired of that. And the rest of his shtick, you know, he's still talking about windmills and, you know, shower faucets. I mean, I think he thinks those are greatest hits. And for some people, they are. But according, I was listening to, I can't remember who it was. Somebody was at the last rally, the one you just mentioned in North Carolina. People were walking out on this stuff. I mean, people were leaving. Now, granted, it was cold night and, you know, blah, blah, nothing at stake. But I find that you know, he has not really upgraded his shtick. There's no, he needs some new song. He needs to put out a new album. You know what I mean? I mean, this is, you know, the old stuff, great, but it's not going to bring in any new people. I mean, it's certainly not going to, and it's not going to revive the people that are kind of, you know, over it a little bit. So, but here's the thing, and this is why that's good for Democrats, because he's still got so many people within the Republican Party that they have a veto, really. That is a group within the party. It's a huge faction within the party. And it's going to make it very difficult for anybody normal to win. I mean, no matter what, it's very likely that even if the party is sick of him and he's not getting the crowds, whatever, he'll still win the nomination because there's so many of those people within the Democratic Party. Unfortunately for him, that's actually not a very big group in the American, you know, political system. I mean, there just aren't that many. I mean, I shouldn't say there aren't that many. There are tens of millions of them, lots of them, but not enough for him to prevail or for the Republicans to benefit from that all that much. If people really are getting sick of him, I mean, he can't lose anybody, right? Because he just lost the last election by 7 million votes. I mean, he can't be losing anybody. He's got to be gaining people in order to do that, or fixing the election to such an extent that, you know, even if he loses by, you know, 12 million votes, that he can still win, which, by the way, they are trying to do. we'll see whether or not they can actually get that done. But, you know, it is interesting to watch it. And it's interesting to watch the fact that people don't seem to notice it. I think part of it is that people aren't paying attention to him. I have to. I'm sure you have to. A lot of people who are listening here are doing it against our will because we have no choice. It's just, you know, if you're into politics and you follow this story, Trump is part of it, whether you like it or not. And I always get blowback from people saying, oh, you know, you shouldn't cover him. You shouldn't talk about him. You know, just let him go. I'm going, it's my job to pay attention to what's going on in the world and going on in the American political system, particularly. And Donald Trump is still hugely influential, and he's just not as sharp as he was. And I think that his act is getting old. That's worth covering, I think, because I think we need to know that.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we get the same thing, like, you just stop talking about the guy. And it's he is sitting at the head of the Republican Party.
Yeah, no doubt.
He shouldn't be. You know, he doesn't actually have any real power. They're pretending he has power, which technically, I guess, makes the power kind of real, but it's actually, so it's a weird scenario, but he is the head of the Republican Party, whether they want him to be or not, and he is going to keep driving them down this path. And yeah, he sees a little success every now and then. That's how we ended up with your Marjorie Taylor Greens and your Lauren Boberts.
Oh, no doubt.
But we also are starting to see, like we saw with, you know, the Senate seats in Georgia in the runoff last year, there's big cracks. There's ways for Democrats to win in areas where it once seemed impossible. I mean, I don't think 4 years ago any of us would have thought, oh, yeah, Georgia's going to go blue in 2020. Oh, and by the way, both their senators are Democrats. Mm-hmm. No, nobody would have believed that. We would have thought, no, you must be thinking of Texas. We're going to turn Texas blue, which has been, you know, the talking point since I've been in this business. Like, oh, we're just a year or two away. Texas is going to be blue. But we're seeing it happen in other places. You know, we've seen some cracks in North Carolina. We see them in Georgia. Unfortunately, we have other states obviously go in the opposite direction. I don't think Florida's a swing state anymore.
I don't think.
Yeah, Florida's a red state, and it's a big one, but the Democrats, you know, still got a pretty good hold on California and New York. Mm-hmm. So New York, California cancels out Texas, Florida. But start picking up these other places that we're looking at here, and suddenly you're looking at a much more favorable map. If at the least you do is make former red states into swing states, that's a big accomplishment. And, you know, Trump's behavior is what's driving a good part of that. The other is, of course, the people on the ground. Stacey Abrams, her contributions cannot be overstated. Right. I mean, it truly remarkable. We need more of that. And Arizona, I think another great example too. Arizona, you know, New Mexico. Headway is being made. Democrats need to keep pushing that way. And I think that's a recipe for success.
Colorado used to be a swing state. Colorado used to be a swing state, and I think it's really a blue state now. I mean, you know, it isn't all bad news. You know, the sweeping the nation with Trumpism, it's there. and it's powerful, particularly within the Republican Party. But the Republican Party is shrinking. I mean, look, there's a reason why they're doing all this stuff with elections, right? It's not, I mean, why go to all that trouble if you got the people behind you, right? You're going to win and you don't, you know, just do it straight up. Everybody vote and we'll win and we'll go do our thing. They know that they are losing the hearts and minds of the American people. So they're exploiting flaws in our system and holes in our system to try to maintain power, regardless of the fact that they know that they're losing the hearts and minds of the American people, instead of trying to actually adapt to the changing in political environment, they're fighting it with everything they have, and they have to because of their people, the people that they have. The mindset of the right in this country is just adamantly opposed to the modern world and the American political environment as it is. And so, you know, that's a fight that we're having, and we're going to have it, and the Democrats have to fight it on that ground. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to blow smoke, because this is a very, very tough political environment for Democrats right now. The country is suffering, in my view, from a mass case of PTSD. Everything that we've been through, and that includes Donald Trump, by the way. Yeah. I think it was from Trump. The pandemic, I think, you know, we've had this constant, you know, kind of upheaval and churning. The culture war is just raging, and it's raging in ways that it's very disturbing, I think, to an awful lot of people. This assault on LGBT people that is actually going backwards at a breakneck pace. I mean, we had reached a certain level of, I think, acceptance, and we're moving forward, and people were much more tolerant. And then all of a sudden, just within the last few months, we're suddenly seeing this rollback in attitudes to something more akin to the 70s or the 60s, maybe even before, about gay rights. And that's just, it's all very discombobulating, I think, for the American public. And so it's difficult. You know, this is a difficult time. I don't think anybody that says that Democrats are, you know, it's all great and it's all good. And a lot of this, I think we can lay at the feet of two Democratic senators who obstructed the agenda that would have made Joe Biden a hugely successful first 2 year president by, you know, enacting some very, very major legislation that would have changed people's lives. They stood in the way of that. So that's just the reality. And I'm not, you know, I don't want to, you know, act like that's not happening. But as I said before, and you agree, the Republicans are handing us a gift in that they've gone batshit crazy. And when that happens, you have something to run against, even as, you know, it's usually a referendum on the incumbent and blah, blah, blah. Well, this is also a referendum on a batshit crazy political party that is out there doing crazy things. And it's stuff, you know, it's everything from Tucker Carlson to Donald Trump to Rick Scott's absolute Looney Tunes agenda that he put out there, put it on paper and said, you know, here, guys, run on this. And you got Lindsey Graham out there going, you know, well, if this is about policy, we win. If it's about personality, we lose. And I'm just sitting there going, you got neither one, dude. You don't have policy and you don't have person. I mean, both of those things are toxic to the American people. But the word has to get out, you know, that has to be people, they have to run on negative partisanship. I'm sorry, that's unpleasant. It really is. I know the Democrats were dying to run on, we got infrastructure and we're going to do all this good stuff and student loans, and they love that, and that we love them for it. Those are all good things. But that's not what's going to win this election or win any election, as long as this other party is out there being absolutely crazy and the country is suffering from PTSD. They're not going to hear 10-point plans. They're just not going to hear it. What they hear is Dr. Seuss and M&Ms and, you know, this crazy, you know, ultra nationalist, masculine, toxic masculine, you know, nonsense that's coming out of the right.
So, yeah, I mean, I agree with you 100%. It's great to run on policy, but maybe this ain't the year for that. It is time to say, listen, we didn't get to do everything we wanted to do, but at the same time, they're trying to kill you. they're trying to do all of these horrible things. So maybe you got to stick with us one more time, vote against this horribleness instead of, you know, for this because we can get you there. We can do the things we need to do.
Couple more senators is all we need. You know, yeah. Maybe one or two is all we need.
Exactly. And so if we can get that, maybe we can stop some of the damage that's being caused. But listen, Heather Digby Parton, absolutely phenomenal talking to you. You're welcome back here on Ring of Fire anytime.
Oh, my pleasure.
It's been a great, great conversation. So thank you for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
That's all the time we have for this week. I want to thank Cliff Schechter and Heather Digby Parton for joining me today. Two absolutely wonderful conversations. I'm Farron Cousins. This has been Ring of Fire. Have a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you next time.